All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the second day of the 58th Annual Mortgage Lending Institute. I'm Amanda Granger, and I am both your moderator this morning and the first speaker. So forgive me that I have my cell phone here, but I'm going to be timing myself. So I will be, I'm not reading text messages while I'm up here. As Dick told you yesterday, we have covered over 100 cases this year, and the cases were largely unexciting. And what surprised me the most about it is we actually had over 50 Supreme Court cases. I covered over 25, and so many of them were just things that I couldn't believe the Supreme Court felt necessary to waste their time on, or that I couldn't believe that the Court of Appeals screwed up because it was so obvious black-letter law. But anyway, I feel obligated to tell you about the Supreme Court cases, even if I think they're boring and unimportant, just because they are Supreme Court cases. So I will be covering them, but don't shoot the messenger just because they're not exciting. The first case is Westward Motor Cars. And this is one of those, it's a Supreme Court case, and it's pretty basic. Basically what happened is the tenant got evicted. The tenant sued for constructive eviction damages in the district court. The landlord had sued for eviction in the justice court. The landlord won his case, the tenant won their case. They both appealed. And for some reason, at one point, the tenant withdrew their appeal of the justice court eviction finding and just went forward with their district court case against the landlord. And the Court of Appeals held that the tenant withdrawing their appeal of the eviction suit in the justice court case was essentially an abandonment of their separate constructive eviction claim in the district court. And the Supreme Court said, no, it's well established in Texas that the justice court only has the right to oversee the right of possession. That's it. Damage claims and any other claims come in the district court, and they're two separate actions, and one does not have a preclusive effect on the other. The next Supreme Court case is about four tenants of American campus communities who complain that their lease did not contain certain language that is required by the Texas Property Code. And this language is required by Section 92056. And basically, the language is supposed to be in underline and bold, and it's supposed to explain to the tenants their rights for self-help remedies under the Texas Property Code. These leases did not contain that information. But unfortunately, or for the tenants, the reality is that the legislature actually passed the law without including any penalties. So the court basically said, yeah, you're right, but you don't get anything. So if you're representing a landlord, you should have this language in your leases. But at this point, there is no penalty for not having it. I think the legislature will probably come back and fix that. But this is another Supreme Court case, Mosaic Baybrook. In this case, the tenant sued the landlord because the landlord had included other charges within what they were calling a water sewer base fee. And under the Texas Water Code, it says that charges billed to tenants for submetered or allocated utility service may only include bills for water or wastewater. So the landlord had included EMS, fire, police, and whatever in this one line item. And it was a hotly debated case at the Supreme Court. It was a 5-4 opinion. There's a lot of dissents and concurring opinions. It seems rather unimportant for the Supreme Court to have spent as much time on this as they clearly did, but some of them felt very passionate about it. Anyway, the majority found that the water code only allows you to have sewer and water fees. You cannot group your fees together. So if you're representing a landlord, just make sure that you aren't bundling fees, or they're not bundling fees together, and that they're separately itemizing them. The next few cases we're going to talk about have to do with contract interpretation. And they're a pretty basic reiterations of the black letter law that oral statements made before a contract is signed are not going to countermand the express terms of the written contract. So in the first one, CC&T Enterprises, it was a failed 1031 exchange, the intermediary had made a bunch of representations about how the 1031 exchange would work and what would happen.